start this conversation and presentation by playing a recording I made at the municipal market of Pinheiros. Pinheiros is a neighborhood of São Paulo. This recording was created on the 15th of February 2018. Play. I'm sitting in a bench, facing forward to a fishmonger called Nossa Senhora de Fátima, Our Lady of Fátima. Around me, I can hear the sound of refrigerators working. For some reason, this brings me comfort. Maybe it's the smell of fish. Perhaps I'm being transported to another place. Other pleasant sounds around me, the handling of cellophane or the piping wrapping of freshly bought filleted fish. A bigger knife interrupts this train of thought. Close to me, to my left, I can hear knives being sharpened and someone washing fish. I can hear knives being sharpened. I can listen to knives being sharpened. I can hear knives being sharpened. Once in a while, one of the employees talks to a client. Occasionally, a phone rings. I try to eavesdrop on different conversations, but I cannot understand if it's a supplier or someone calling to remember not to forget to buy such and such. I can also hear the voices downstairs, an echoing museum traveling through the main hall that houses a diverse array of shops, stalls, restaurants, coffee shops, and local arts and crafts. A louder and higher-pitched voice occasionally cuts through this mosaic. I cannot hear any street seller chants, pregão in Portuguese. This saddens me. 2 for 5, 3 for 10. The world is beautiful if you buy fruit at José Pinto. I would suck at this. Cashing register drawers open and close. Coins accidentally fall on the floor or make their deliberate way to the merchants. In this veritable symphony, we also have trouser pockets, bags or wallets being accessed, leading to a brief solo of car or house keys. Cold bearer scanners beep away, and the receipt printers go Shopping carts pass by me, in line or individually. People pass by me. Their footsteps, staccato sounds, change accordingly to show so use, passes by overall weight or each individual choreography. Pluck, 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 or pluck, 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 or pluck, pluck, pluck. A cleaning lady passes by me and swipes the floor, moving the dirt to a pan and making a lower pitch sound in the process. People pass by me carrying plastic bags, and I can hear the distinct squeaky sounds of plastic rubbing into plastic. I see a fly on the floor and imagine the possibility of being able to listen to it, of being able to hear it move. It flies, but even a high frequency made by the flap of the wings of this insect does not cut through the ever-present sound of the refrigerators. Occasionally, the fishmonger-style employees look at me with suspicion, and for a brief moment, I try to imagine what they're thinking about. Stop. This passage that I've read out loud, perhaps, lies outside a traditional canon associated with film recording. Although I do think it shares similarities, it required careful positioning and planning as any film recording would. This careful placement enables an exploration of acoustics, of up closer or further away sonic events, of continuous or episodic sonic events, of loud or silent sounds. The microphone would normally potentiate and play a part in this type of wonder, both literally or figuratively, in a particular recording scene or event, but so does writing itself. Its slower pace of inscription brings forth a playful descriptive effort, where myself imaginatively navigated and filtered sonic events around me. Both of them, both audio recording and writing, as a form of recording, lay down for me as an essential question, in a crude paraphrasing of Christoph Small concept of musicking. When does meaningful music, when does meaningful sound begin and when does it end? Recording through writing or recording when a microphone implies a choice of what to document or not, imparted by the range or directionality of the microphone, or by the limits that language has in describing a sonic milieu. In turn, the apparatus of writing prompted a rediscovery of language's sonority. In my red text, this implied the poor use of figures of speech, repetition, syntax, and phonetics. Moreover, the apparatus needed for this type of endeavor causes a momentary disruption. In the everyday, amused or astonished looks at the hairy windscreen or boom. In the everyday, amused or surprised looks at the person sitting, listening, and taking notes. The resulting audio file can be further edited or post-produced. Equalization, noise reduction, normalization, compression. But so was the above text, with a soothing out of inconsistencies, wordiness, or overall size. My writing is shaped by practice in a particular critical poetics regarding field recording. The incoming soundscape was now transduced, i.e. acoustic into electric energy, and then converted into the supposed neutrality of the binary code of zeros and ones. But who's to say that particular audio recording techniques, MS, binaural, or ambisonics, for instance, are the result of market forces, industry standards, and fads such as virtual reality and spatial audio, all of them having a particular ideology. This type of equipment is often expensive. In most cases, you get what you pay for, such as in the case of portable recorders, better microphone preamplifiers, better analog to digital converters, or better battery time. And it should be evident to anyone that this type of equipment does not last forever, whether due to program obsolescence, malfunctioning, improper handling, or merely changing file transfer procedures, such as devices that had firewire or use recording cards that are no longer used. In the end, both efforts, writing or traditional audio recording, are the result of a methodology that takes into account the mission contingencies towards the presentation of a particular place or event. In the case of the above recording, I have laid out beforehand possible questions in the poetic transition of my listening into words. Firstly, to explore the textual account of a possible sonic ethical political stance regarding a place. For instance, is there a sentient or non-sentient thing louder than anything else? If so, why? Is there a sound that's disappearing or changing to regulation, gentrification, or ecological process? Is there a sound mark, to use the acoustic ecology parlance, that's indexical of the production and transaction of capital? Secondly, what is that only I can only hear? I'm not talking about a direct transcription of sonic events, but a sensible openness for the inscription of sensations, memories, and thoughts that come from listening. In turn, and finally, I wonder for those elements, alongside a general description of sonic events taking place at the time of writing, to be part of a reproducible collective listening. From potential clients and merchants present at the Mercado de Pinheiros, up until the would-be reader, and in our case, listener of the above text. Salome Vogel, and the writer and artist, engages in a similar practice that she calls a phonographic writing, where you can find examples in that website. Let me read an example of her work called My Room. My room has sound behind its walls. Under its floorboards and on top of its ceiling, they make it shrink and expand, move and be still. What is in a room is visible, present, objectively here. The sound is invisible, not here but present all the same. It is generated in my subjective hearing of it, rushing into the objective and changing what I see. The walls are less stable in sound, wobbly even, permeable, letting things in and out, testing notions of intimacy, neighborliness, and safety. The visual room is the set on which sound plays invisible narratives, some sinister, some cheerful, some unnoticed. Unseen protagonists who might really be there or just invented by me play off fantastic scenarios that might be real, involving alien ships, cats, dogs, and microwaves. Anything can happen. You might be thinking by now that this comparative effort is a pointless affair. There's just no way for a textual account to rival the fidelity or experience of audio recording. And although it might be true that perhaps the audio file affords a more significant sample rate than a written account, let us not forget that a recording, in whatever format it is not the bliss itself. It is a fragment, a fiction that is only made whole when it's played or read. It is made complete by the world that the listener imparts to the experience, in her, his imagination, sensation, and politics. This is certainly the case of Han Kai White's work, Music While We Work, a 35-minute multi-channel video and audio work that documents a series of workshops conducted at her hometown, Hui, in the Yulin County in Taipei, where she invited retired workers from a sugar factory to return to that place, record it, and subsequently transform those sounds. This approach stems from one's belief in, quote, whoever holds the microphone and what she or he records delineates from different points, the right to speak, the right to interpret, and the power relationship between sound maker and recipient, end quote. In this case, I have taken this analytical tool de force to expose the other common element between audio recording or phonographic writing, the inevitable trace of the field recordist. And even when its body is edited out, the resulting track or archive, one still hears her, his authorial input. Although it may seem that this present is more evident in the creation of a phonographic piece of writing, I have presented several common elements to both ways of sonically documenting a place, event, or situation. These revolve around issues of planning or positioning, decision-making processes, the discovery of sonic possibilities, the implementation of guidelines, a sort of poetics to the recording process, the possibility of editing, reviewing the work, and most importantly, the realization that the recording is the beginning of something. There's a disciplinary history in the realm of ornithology and ethnomusicology where the absence of the field recordist was deemed necessary in the name of scientific rigor or objectivity. Field recording as a genre and artwork willingly continued this tradition, or unwillingly. This discussion is well documented in Mark Peters' white paper, The Noisy Non-Self, Towards a Monstrous Practice of More Than Human Listening. With this practical context in mind, it seems that the potential for field recording lies in revealing new unheard sounds, approaching rare exotic places, or natural recording drones produced by everyday machines, such as the case of Francisco Lopez's La Selva, or buildings, as a type of sonic material that creates an aesthetic ambiguity between the natural and composed sound. This process is described by well-known field recordist Chris Watson in an interview given to Belgian sound artist LSVN, as the process in which, to quote, location sounds seem to generate their own music, their own beauty, and a strangeness that couldn't be contrived in a studio. For me, this ambiguity seems to predicate on an erasing of the recorder's presence. This is evidenced in artist Carla's questioning in the introduction chapter of the In the Field, The Art of Field Recording, a book that he organized with Kevin Lane, of what seems to be an idea of, quote, recorder's presence as an insult to the very transparency of the pure moment of contact. In other words, the expression of other forms of authorship is presence is seen as impediment to a pure experience of listening. Moreover, we can also identify this discursive apparatus in a post-Cajun world as a search for an idealized purity that is akin to a latent modernism in contemporary sonic practices, that has been well described by Seth Kinkoman as the sound in a self-tendency, where the extra, the context of sonic production is to be sublimated. Along these issues is also the problematic of an idea of nature that is antithetical to human presence. This critique is presented in Timothy Morton's book, Ecology Without Nature, Rethinking Environmental Aesthetics, where the sublimation in literatures and the arts in general results from a continuous aestheticization of the very idea of nature. Nature versus man. Nature as discourse. This opposition is at the core of Will Montgomery's critical overview of the work produced by Chris Watson, Peter Kusek, and Toshio Tsunoda, where, quote, human intervention in a landscape and conspicuous artifice in recording or editing of the sounds qualifies the idea of the natural. Natural beauty and artistic practice are mutually dependent. So there's an idea of musicality that depends on the absence of human presence, thematically sustained by a romantic view of nature. In terms of my practice, of my praxis, and as a critique of the scene, I've tried to offer another view regarding this, with a focus and search, shifting from a focus and search on compelling sounds to a consideration of how the process of field recording, in a post-disciplinary approach, presents and plays, engages with everyday life, and question forms of documentation. Sonically, registry and field becomes a shared encounter. From this standpoint, I will now explore the notion of presence in field recording. In the video, I walk in the sand towards the ocean. Let me play an excerpt of this video. Thank you. You know, in I walk in a sand towards the ocean, the viewer can see me moving and recording, holding the microphone in my hand, wearing a pair of headphones. This performative action enhances the spatial aspects of field recording, such as duration, movement, and position. The distance between the starting point and the end point becomes a slow crossfade, visually signified by walking and the sound of my feet as the sand changes from dry to wet, as it changes from one scene to the sound of the ocean. This movement within the visual composition translates into a body that never entirely disappears. While his disappearance is hinted at in the landscape, his sonic existence never leaves us, connecting us to the whole process. This move from apparent to transparent, from land to body, from the body to sound, exposes the method of rendering one particular reality in attempting to construct a specific listening position, and presents the performance as a movement recording led by an individual. The common theme of the sonic presence of the recorders or other human actors appears to me as a fruitful element in discussing the artist's responsibility in dealing with and presenting a sight, but also as an essential aspect of connecting with or experiencing a place. This brief presentation is not an attempt to redefine the process. The objective is to create a way in which one might discuss and present field recording, not only through the sound in itself ethos, but also through the situation created by the artist and their ethical, political, and artistic motivations in dealing with the medium. And I walk in the sand towards the ocean, it questions the procedure of framing and contextualizing environmental practices, moving away from a mythological, exotic perspective towards one of I could be there, creating a more extensive array of connections between listener and the reception of work, a temporary cohabitation between field recordist, listener, and place. Perhaps we could call this moment a sort of public sphere, a concept originally developed by Jürgen Habermas and critically phrased by Nancy Fraser. Fraser describes it as a space for development of a critical theory of democracy, where communication between social agents leads to the creation of a public opinion that's capable of holding, quote, officials accountable, and that the actions of the state express the will of the citizenry. First, we acknowledge that the concept excuses a willful bourgeois view of individuals in their ability to express themselves equally without considerations of class, race, and gender. Also, the concept loses its efficacy when the nation-state enterprise, the frame to which public opinion is supposed to target their communicated efforts, seems to have no control over the movement of capital across the globe. Perhaps from a woefully optimistic stance, and from the possibility of some sort of transnational dialogue and from community building, I reckon that field recording has a role to play in times of deep ecological crisis across the globe, continuous exploitation of the surface of labor, political partnership, and sonic urban gentrification. Thank you.